these pornography companies, they're driven by profit, and they're going to use you as a means to an end. Their whole aim and goal is to get boys and men addicted as soon as possible, because what they're doing is they're profiting off of our life force.
Today, I'm going to be exploring a topic that I think is so important. We all know is so important, which is really diving into some of the biggest shadow around sexuality. I'm going to be exploring a lot around porn and porn addiction and the energetic effects and the effects on our intimacy of porn. So I'm going to be chatting today with Tyson Adams, who is a trauma-informed internal family systems men's coach. He's also a somatic body worker and psychedelic facilitator. He himself spent 20 years addicted to pornography, so he really knows what he's talking about. And he outgrew it 7 years ago and has really found his passion and purpose in helping other men to master their life force energy. He's also co-facilitating men's work, leadership intensives, and he works with couples who are experiencing intimacy challenges. When he's not working on those things, you'll catch him on a rock wall or riding a slack line in sunny San Diego. So it is my great pleasure to welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Shashi. Really super excited for this conversation.
Me too. We've already been chatting about it. And, you know, in all my years of working with Tantra, you know, there could be so much focus on like, oh, let's be tantric lovers and the divine God and the divine goddess. But, you know, like we really do need to address where we came from, the upbringing we have, the society we live in, and how to really work with these things. And often not mentioned is pornography. So I'm super thrilled that you are putting your voice here. So do you want to start by just sharing a little bit about your own journey?
Yes. Should we go all the way back to the beginning?
Let's.
Okay. So I was born into a family where there was sexual trauma and alcoholism on both sides, kind of going in both directions. So I came through the portal with a nervous system that was wrecked for the most part. And then as a young boy, unfortunately, I had my own sexual traumas, step-grandfather. Took me 10 years to discover that and unpack it, really, through therapy, through men's work, through hundreds of psychedelic journeys, through really going deep in order to actually discover what was really underneath the surface. Healed that, made peace with it. And, you know, shortly thereafter, as I kind of moved into my, let's say, 9-10-year-old range, that was when I got exposed to pornography way too early. Much like lots of little boys, we just found it. My friends and I, we just found some pornography in a field. I still remember it. It was a Vanna White Playboy. Opened it up. See Vanna White. My mom loved Wheel of Fortune, this, you know, TV show that I had watched a lot when I was a child. And that really was the moment when that obsession took over me. And from that point forward, that was really the only thing that I could focus on. My adolescence, my play, my, just all of those things that were normal things kids would do just started to morph into the pursuit of the porn, right? And so shortly thereafter, my hometown, I live in Washington State, we got what's called CASA, which CASA is this program. It's kind of like Napster. You can download pornography. So we went from no internet to high-speed internet. So there wasn't even dial up. And so as soon as I found that at 12 years old, I started going deep into watching pornography before I had ever even had a girlfriend or even had a kiss. So all of that pornography was influencing my experience in the way that I was relating to women, relating to girlfriends. And that was really what jumpstarted a 20-year porn addiction. And then when I left high school, went off to a fraternity at the University of Washington in Seattle, and joined that fraternity with a porn library of thousands of porn videos, right? So indexed by porn star and genre, and it was very normalized within this fraternity culture, which is drink and get blacked out, and then everybody jokes around about not bogging down on the internet at the end of the evening because everybody's, you know, in their rooms watching porn. So I kind of grew up in that belly of the porn, just like hitting and shaping my reality, my psychology, and my way of relating. And it made a lot of turmoil in all of my relationships through my whole childhood and adolescence and adulthood. So, yeah.
I can imagine. I mean, I'm listening and like already bursting with questions of like, you know, although this is also incredibly normal, you know, but how do you think that shaped you, you know, like how did it affect relating with girls and then women?
Yeah, well, what I didn't realize now, but as I went through my trauma training, when we watch pornography, where, and I've also watched a lot of pornography on psychedelic mushrooms and DMT and LSD, I run a lot of experiments. And by doing so, I started to realize that we're not just watching it as it programs us, we're also absorbing the energy of whatever we're watching. So there's this, yeah, so there's like this weird aspect to it that's invisible to us that we don't know we're bringing in. And so what I didn't know is that I was eroticizing the actual anxiety of both, you know, the secrecy, silence, and shame in my family system, but also whatever I was observing on the screen was also being absorbed into my system. Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit more about that? Like, that's really fascinating that you used psychedelic experiences. What were you, were you seeing things? Like, how did you have that realization about the energy and the field that you were absorbing? Mm-hmm.
Well, I wasn't watching pornography with the intent to masturbate. These are experiments that I've run in the last few years where I'm taking psychedelic medicine and then watching pornography to see how it's impacting my nervous system and my body and my psyche so that I can teach people what's actually going on. One of the things that's become very obvious to me is that when you're holding a phone in your hand or you're holding a computer, we have a field that's around us, whether it's an auric field or from a, you know, Qigong perspective, we have a field. And so what we don't realize is that when we're watching that, you know, that computer, that technology inside of our field, not only is it absorbing into our own bodies and our own systems, but it's also absorbing into the field around us. And so then when we're going out into the world and we're looking out at the world, we're also looking through the world through that pornographic energy that is now in our field that we are unaware of. So I often ask women like, hey, have you ever had that situation where you meet somebody or you meet a guy and you just get an icky feeling and you sense maybe he's got, you know, either he's like he's got a pornographic mindset or he's objectifying. And most women say, yeah, I've experienced that. And often that's because it's absorbed in us and around us as we're moving out through the world. And to my last point here, when I would take the porn or when I would take the mushrooms, watch the porn, then I would go lay down, eye mask on, put the music on, and then I would actually just be with it in my body. And then what I started to notice was, oh my gosh, there's a file storage system in my psyche and also in my body of everything I ever watched. And as I started to do that, I would use the psychedelics to move through that energy, metabolize it, dissolve it, shake it, scream it, purge it, let it all go so that I could come back to center and actually feel safe in my system and in my, you know, ability to move through the world. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And how do you feel this is linked with trauma? Because you're also trained in trauma, right? And we know from trauma work that a lot of like women who are sexually abused end up in the sex industries and presumably the porn industry. So like, yeah. What are your understandings around that connection?
Yeah. So when I went through my trauma training, I was, unaware of this, but trauma is not the event. It's not what happened to me. It's the energy stored in my nervous system when something happens too much, too fast, or too soon, or not enough, which is the neglect piece, right? It's not, I didn't have parents to say, hey, what's going on for you? Don't do that, right? So it's a combination of things, but it's the story and it's the energy that was in my system. And so when you're going into intimacy, you're bringing that energy, whether you realize it or not, into that experience, into that partnership, into that sexual experience. So when you think about women that go, or women or men that go into the sex industry, oftentimes there's either visible or invisible, conscious or unconscious, eroticized wounds from childhood that haven't necessarily been processed and had a therapeutic process around them. And so then they normalize it and then they somehow have created it to be an empowerment experience. And then that's what causes them to go down those paths to be in, you know, in the pornography or inside of the industry itself. So not right or wrong, not immoral or, you know, moral or immoral, but just the nature of how trauma begets more trauma and creates more of itself.
I can this term eroticized wounds is a really interesting term. Could you elaborate on that, on what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I use that because there's a lot of power over power under dynamics inside of sexuality. Whether it's BDSM or whether it's just in general, the way that masculine feminine teachings are created. And what I notice is that often these wounds are coming from the often these eroticizations, these things that we find kinky, are actually born of wounding. So a good example is there was a study done by a friend of mine in Seattle where he looked at it was 13,000 men with porn and sex addiction, and what he found was is that the genre of porn that you find to be erotic is in has a connection to what you went through as a child. So, for example, if you like porn where you're in a position of power and maybe there is a younger person or a subservient ethnic background or a small body, often these men had punitive and dominant fathers where they felt very small. And so that the way that the wound shows up is that then they eroticize needing and wanting to have power over, the person that they're attracted to or that particular type of porn. Whereas on the flip side, women, or excuse me, men that eroticize, let's say, MILF porn, or sort of being under power of a woman, they often had a situation where their father had a lot of shame and often was cheating, and then often confided in them about their infidelities. And so what we can begin to start to understand is that the actual search terms that you're putting into the actual Pornhub or whatever it is that you're looking at are the trailheads to the deeper psychological healing that is possible if you're willing to go there and have somebody walk you back in time to see where the power under or power over struggles happened and how that manifested in the way in which you're aroused in your intimate experiences.
Amazing. So then presumably this is part of the unraveling. I mean, I love what you're saying because first of all, it takes away creating more blame and guilt around it. It's just like here's some wounding and here's where it's going. And it's also not healing. It's just like presumably if people are just searching for that porn again and again, they're just playing out that wound again and again. What are the steps to actually healing that wound?
Yeah, so are you speaking to, let's say, men? I'll speak with men because I think that'd be the easiest way. So the way I look at porn and or porn addiction is it something that you can't stop doing, right? So simple way to describe an addiction is something that you want to stop or you're curious about stopping, but you can't. So if you notice that that's the case, then you just acknowledge that, like there's something here that I don't have control of. Second step is to, that's admitting it to self. Second step would be admitting it to somebody else, a friend, a confidant, a partner, somebody who isn't going to force that deeper into a shame spiral, somebody that's accepting and unconditionally loving of what you're going through. And then from that process, we have to understand these addictions. They have an actual physiological aspect to them. Like when we ejaculate every single day, especially men that do it regularly and daily, there are proteins, amino acids, vitamins, and minerals that are leaving our body in our seminal fluid. And it's a lot, actually. And so what happens is that when we ejaculate, our hypothalamus and our brain and our organs have to work on overdrive to reproduce our seminal fluid. And so that takes up a lot of energy and a lot of life force to reproduce that. And so then we're tired or we're lethargic, and then we consume other shit that we don't want to consume, right? So often we're out there going, why am I tired? Why am I anxious? Why am I irritable? Why can't I get anything done? Why do I not have focus, drive, and flow in my business? Well, maybe it's actually a depletion issue. It's a life force issue, right? So men have to get on board where it's logical to do this because, first of all, I have it. Second of all, logically, this would be something to get in touch with. And then thirdly, we have to understand, well, what is it costing you? What is it costing you to leak your life force and to not have all that energy in your body or in your system? And so for some men, it's time. Other men, it's entrepreneurship. It's dollars. Other men, they can't attract a partner or their relationship is falling apart. Other men, they're just frightened. They're scared they're going to get caught. Like, there's all kinds of things that are woven in and around this. And then what we have to do from that point is we have to accept and understand that out of the hundreds of men that I've coached in this pornography region, literally maybe a handful have ever had any sound guidance moving from boyhood into manhood. So right. there's grief there for us as a collective and as individuals that we haven't actually accepted. And so if we can understand that there's grief here, that we didn't have anybody, you know, bringing us, like, for example, Taoist practices and these, you know, ancient cultures, they would bring the boys out to teach them these, you know, sexual kung fu and these tantric ways of being. And we don't have that in our culture. It's just basically, it's been sinful for thousands of years. And so what we have to do is we have to accept that it wasn't your fault. Like, it wasn't my fault that I didn't have any guidance. It wasn't my fault. It's not any boy's fault if they didn't have guidance. And so we need to stop self-blaming that we're doing this and that we're out of control. And then we also have to understand that these pornography companies, they're driven by profit, and they're going to use you as a means to an end. Their whole aim and goal is to get boys and men addicted as soon as possible, because what they're doing is they're profiting off of our life force.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
could you just mention, I don't know if it's a good time to bring it in, but I'd love your analysis that I saw on your Instagram about that life force. Like, you actually measured it or estimated it, I should say. Could you share that? Because I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah. So the question is big picture, do we have a porn problem in this world or in this nation? Right. And I would say it's globally. But if you look at the top, so I looked at the top 30 websites in America, and five of those top websites are porn sites. So it's Pornhub, it's XNXX, it's XHamster, it's OnlyFans, and what's the other one? I can't recall. Doesn't matter. But those five top websites produce 6.35 billion visits a month. It's a lot of porn. Like, this is a lot of, you know, men going to these sites. And of course, some of them are women, but a lot of them, or most of them, are men. And so what I thought was, okay, not every single time that a man comes to the site is he going to be ejaculating. Some people just come to watch, some people, you know, just edge and then they leave. So I was like, okay, 75% of that, which is roughly around 5 billion or so, right? So I said, okay, how much ejaculate, like, how much, like, cum is 5 billion ejaculates, right? And so then I measured that in comparison to a tablespoon of semen. And what I realized is that is the equivalent of 30 Olympic sized pools per month, or one Olympic sized pool of cum every single day is basically going out just in the top five websites in America, let alone all the thousands of other sites that are out there. So when I paint that picture, it's my point is to say, we were, as animals, not designed to be able to interface with this technology and the ways in which it's been weaponized against us to commercialize our life force, because as it keeps us addicted, they can feed us ads, and that's how they make money. And so there's a part of this that's also like, we have to be like, fuck you. We have to be a bit angry at this monster that doesn't actually see us as a soul or as a human being. It just sees us as a cog in the wheel to whoever those profit and those shareholders actually are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fired up, obviously.
I was going to say, you talked about grief. I was going to say there must be anger as well, because there's also, you know, like, that's the best that we were given. And our culture was just like to turn in consumerism and to have our precious life force energy. You know, it's brilliant that you make this Olympic pool analogy, because as you and I know from studying Taoist sexual arts, the Taoists were all about how precious that sexual energy is, and how semen in particular, you know, of course, female fluids in their own way, but semen in particular is packed full of the most precious life force energy. You can create a child out of it. And so it's not only about the nutrients, but about the vitality and the life force energy. And what we spend that on is really important. And of course, there's one way of like spending it on creating children. But, you know, if the only other alternative that people know of is porn, there's this question of where are we spending our life force energy? and what is the effect of that? And I think this is something that most people don't really think about, you know, it's like we're feeding this big beast, the porn entity beast, you know, like, and of course we know there's lots of violence and crime associated with that. It's, you know, it's not only about the personal detriment, but also what are we feeding collectively? And, you know, there's so much to this topic. But maybe because you work with men, you could talk a bit about the individual journey of like, what do you notice that men are to discover about taking their energy back or putting their energy elsewhere, and or maybe your own experience around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I teach, at the core of what I teach is a mythopoetic map. And that mythopoetic map is that the way that a man treats his penis is the way that he treats everyone and everything in the world.
That's alarming.
I know. But here's why I say it. When we are unconsciously objectifying our own body and we're using our penis to feel better whenever we're sad or sick or bored or angry or anything we don't want to feel, anytime we're uncomfortable, if that's where we go, then what we don't realize is that we're unconsciously objectifying ourselves. And then therefore we're wiring our psyche to then look out at the world in the same, through that same lens, right? So it's this sort of reality that if I'm using and abusing self, then I will use and abuse women. I will use and abuse the natural world, and I will use and abuse Paul to get to Peter in my business transactions. So I see this as a spiritual movement, which is that the first step is for a man to begin the process of coming into loving, kind relationship with his own body and his own penis instead of treating it as if it's an object. And the other aspect to that is that we also have to accept and understand that we're coming out of thousands of years of circumcision, which is that the first moment that a boy comes into this world, his penis is objectified, right? So therefore, as a boy who was objective, or I was circumcised 3 hours after I was born. So I was, you know, having to go through my own psychedelic journeys to grieve that original core trauma that I came into this world through. So understanding that when your penis is objectified before you have any agency and sovereignty, does that not create a destructive entitlement as we age to then take from the world? Yeah. So this is deep. You can feel that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very much so. If it's, when you put it like that, it's like almost overwhelming, like the layers of trauma, re-traumatizing trauma and being passed on.
Yeah.
But then of course we know when we choose to do healing, we're choosing to say it stops here. Like I'm going to be the one in the lineage that changes this, right?
Yeah.
And I think many of us in our generations are now wanting to do that healing and make that change.
Yeah. And when I talk about circumcision, I think it's really critical for me to speak to the women out there, because there are mothers probably listening to this, and it's not your fault. I mean, this is, women's labor rights have been taken away by church and by the medical industry for thousands of years. And often they don't know what's best, and we're not educated. The good news is that in the 70s, it was 90% of Americans. It's now only about 55% of Americans are being circumcised. So it's on the decline. But when you look at the countries in the world with the highest circumcision, they have the highest violence towards women. They have the highest issues with sexual abuse and things of that nature. So this is an issue. It's a major issue.
Wow. I never knew that. That's a really potent statistic there. So are there particular things that you feel, you know, there's probably guys listening to this like, now what do I do? Like I was 3 hours old, what can I do? What are stages of healing that can be done later in life around circumcision in particular?
You know, I haven't been able to touch into pre-verbal, pre-egoic trauma release and lineage burden stuff without psychedelics. But now that I've been trained in internal family systems, I've been able to work with men and do internal family systems therapy sessions where I can actually lead them back to being the adult man that they are today, seeing their newborn self as an actual infant and seeing that snip and the, you know, and the tears and the crying that they've gone through, and to help that process and heal. So I've been doing a lot of that circumcision trauma integration work with men, which is a huge deal. And then again, just what can we practically do today? There are different devices that you can use to help stretch the skin to kind of develop some sensitivity back, because a lot of that jackhammering sex that we do is born of not having sensation there because our penis has been, you know, mutilated when we didn't have any agency. So there are some things to do somatically and also psychologically to help heal it. But, you know, the psychedelic work has been the most powerful for me to.
Powerful work. And so, yeah, basically reparenting is another way of looking at what you're looking at, like bringing in the adult and going to the inner child and holding ourselves in places where we weren't held the first time it happened. Just to, you know, reiterate that, because it's such an important point that you made for healing.
Yeah.
So there's so many pieces of the work that you do that I feel like I could go into, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are feeling that as well. A topic that I found with working with people around overcoming pornography is around embodiment. And I've noticed that going into Tantra and conscious sexuality, one of the biggest differences that I noticed when people ask me what's the difference is sex that's just mostly a mental or a fantasy based, you know, or fantasy driven, versus getting back into the body or doing embodied work and somatic. And of course, it's all linked with trauma healing, because if we talk about trauma healing, we use the word somatic. So yeah, I wonder if you could share a little bit about that journey, how it is with porn, and how to return back in the body, especially if, like you, guys had porn from such an early age that they probably never even were guided into the body in the first place.
Yeah. So I'll actually share my response to that as a story, because that'll help elucidate sort of the point of what the journey might look like. When I was, I lived in Southeast Asia. I lived in Laos. I had a coffee roaster in a cafe. I lived in the jungle. We had amazing, amazing experience putting in water wells, building schools for kids. So I did philanthropy before I did sex coaching. But while I was there, I had used a spermicidal lubricant condom. It basically fucked up my urethra and my bladder, and it basically unlocked what I didn't know I had in my genetics, which was interstitial bladder cystitis, which is basically like pins and needles through your urethra and bladder and everything. So I went on a healing journey through India and Southeast Asia and all over the US and tried to find a doctor that could figure out what was wrong with me, and couldn't actually solve the situation whatsoever. There was no solution to it, because it wasn't a bacterial infection. It was a chronic bladder disorder that ran in my family. So it was like brutal, brutal. So what I realized was, I was like, I have to stop masturbating. So I decided to do 30 days of no pornography and no masturbation. And this wasn't because it was trending or because it was cool or because I wanted to be a men's coach or any of this. It was literally medical emergency. I'm freaking out, right? So I did it. I got to the end of that 30 days. I also had in that, even though there was still a lot of pain, that was the first time I had ever realized that I was running my life force basically at a quarter tank my whole life. So finally, my testosterone, my body, my minerals were able to rejuvenate, and I was able to actually get a lot of shit done. I was able to be very productive. So I was like, whoa, something just semen retention thing, even though I didn't even know that that was a word or that that was a phrase. Because I was still a baby in my journey, you know? And so when I came through that 30-day portal, though, I had this idea. And this idea was, can I actually masturbate and bring myself to orgasm without thinking my way through it? Meaning either having sex, watching porn, or imagining in my head this. And so I had this sort of challenge to myself. Can I do it? Can I actually have an orgasm? And so I remember I was in my hammock inside at my cafe underneath the moon, full moon's out, stars. It was beautiful, super nice night. And I started to explore my body, and all of a sudden my erection came, and I was like, wow, this is interesting. This is new for me. This is a beautiful thing. What's happening? And so then I had this reality, which was that I kept going back to the porn, kept going back to the fantasy, kept going back to all that gunk. So what I did was I just stared at the moon, and that got me out of my hammock to the edge of the rail, looking at the moon, channeling with the moon. And basically I realized, oh my gosh, if I just stare at the moon, I can start to circulate this energy through my system. Started breathing, and all of a sudden had my first like, ah, you know, like full body orgasmic experience of my life, unlocked now what has become a body of work, which is eco-eroticism and reconnecting your sexuality back into the universe and into that non-dual space. But that was this aha moment where I go, wow, I didn't even know it was possible to feel my way to orgasm. I thought I had to think my way. There's a whole other way of relating to this. And polarity doesn't just have to be between myself and another woman. It can actually be between myself as an integrated man within masculine, feminine here in relationship to nature. And that was when everything started to open up and when I went on the healing path and started all my therapy and you know, the rest is history, so.
I love that story so much. You know, Shashi means moon, my name. And I lived in Thailand on Koh Phangan for 19 years. And I mm-hmm. also fell in love with the moon and doing sexual energy practices. I even built like a pyramid in my back garden with a mattress in so I could make love to my partner under the full moon.
Beautiful.
So I just love that you bring that as your example. I mean, it's just so far away from what we're given culturally, isn't it? To connect to nature, to connect to sensations in the body. And, you know, I think that was a big turning point for me. I'd never really enjoyed sex that much at university. I was lucky I was 21 when I found Tantra. But to sort of discover getting out of fantasy and just being in the body, I just found it groundbreaking. I could be present. It was more pleasurable. There was healing happening. And I just realized that this is taken away from most people. Most people are taught to project all their sexual energy out onto fantasy, giving away all of their life force energy. And then they get addicted to that. And then they think they really want it. And so they pay for it and seek it. And this whole addiction comes where people think that's what they're desiring. And they're robbed of this birthright of connecting to this moment, connecting to this body, and connecting to this beautiful planet as well.
So, yeah. Within your experience living out there and exploring your sexuality, did you start to explore your own sexuality in relationship to the ecology and to the universal forces? Or was it mainly through your relationship with your partner? Or did it kind of go back and forth?
No. A lot was on my own because I had, like you, I had a cyst. When I started to have tantric sex, I quickly mm-hmm. developed pain. I had pain because I had a lot of healing to do. So I actually moved alone into the jungle for 6 weeks. And I did Taoist practices of ovarian breathing and just listening to my ovaries. And I realized then that I was afraid of my own wild nature, what I call my mm-hmm. wild woman. There was a big snake passing by and I just realized I was so afraid of wildness. But when I breathed it through my body with the practices, it became sexual energy. And then I realized, wow, I'm contracting and pushing away the wildness of nature and been rejecting it. But if I let it through, it makes me orgasmic. Mm-hmm. And there's so much life force here. So I reclaimed my wild woman. I realized that I don't need to be afraid and contracted. And as I did that, I literally bent my knees and birthed out the cyst. It like bled out of my body. I was about to have surgery. They gave me 6 weeks to have surgery. And instead, I went in the jungle.
Oh, so I'm so happy for you. That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful.
And like you, I then gave my life to teaching this to others. I opened a clinic for women. I still run women's groups. So no, I really resonate. But, you know, you and I are talking about like living in Southeast Asia. What about people who are listening who like live in an apartment in the middle of a city and they're like, well, I can't go and like self-pleasure in a jungle under the moon. Or maybe they can at some point. But what about for those people?
Yeah. I love the question. And thank you so much for sharing that, because I feel that people that are really drawn to this work from an embodied place, from a soulful place, have their dark night of the soul experience with inside of their sexuality. They kind of come through that portal and then they turn back around and they help the younger self, their younger selves that are out there in the world listening. So I just love that you shared that. So, oh, thank you. So to answer your question, I have created this and it's called Masturbation as a Death Practice. And so the way that it works is you prompt yourself with this question. If it were the last time you were going to masturbate and you knew that you were going to die tomorrow, how would you do it differently than you're currently doing it? And then from that place, meditate, pray, journal, you know, dance, and don't think your way into it, but feel, listen your way into it. And then consider all of the different things that you might add to that experience. Music and sound and candles and lights and ambiance and cleaning your place and mirrors and toys and music and all of the things that can add value to that dance so that you can elongate it out. And then when you go through that process, whatever that looks like, you get to the other side of it and you allow yourself to really have that pleasure. That's where you develop self-love, which is, can you stay for a little bit in that moment and allow yourself to have what you've just created? You are both the lover and the loved. You are the giver and the receiver of that experience, and allow yourself to stay there. And then from those places, enter some of the deepest meditations of my life right after those experiences. And so what happened to me in this process of doing a 3-year celibacy journey was I started to get in touch with the rhythms of my arousal, and that sort of married and paired into working with the moon even deeper. And so I started to realize, oh, once a month on the full moon is the right time. So I would schedule that day completely out. No work, no friends, no nothing. Wake up early, meditation, prayer, go to the ocean, dive, go in. I would microdose. I would get a massage. I would go to float tanks. I would do my slackline. I would be in embodied practice all day long, so that when I got to that evening and I was in that moment, I was able to stay there and not race for the orgasm as if I had for the last, 20 years during all the porn, right? The point isn't that. And I taught myself in that process how to become multi-orgasmic, and becoming multi-orgasmic and learning how to do these practices by reading them and then teaching yourself through breath and embodiment and self-touch and massage and perineum squeezes and toys and massage guns, you learn how to rewild yourself. And so I look at it as self-initiation that every man and every woman can choose to take if they're willing to get to know those deep aspects of who they are underneath of all the programming and all of the, need for other, right? Because I started to realize in this process that I had outsourced my arousal to the porn, to the creams, to the pills, to the women to make me feel better. And when you bring that back into self and you're not outsourcing that, you start to realize, oh, I'm not also going to outsource that responsibility to anybody else or anything else in any aspect of my life moving forward. So it's really about, and it's building an accountability practice with yourself and how that bleeds into your whole life. So.
And I love how you also point out that it's not only like sexual practices, like, bringing more meditation and awareness into self-pleasure, but all the things that we do in the day, like self-practice, breath work, ice baths, whatever, but all the practices that help with our healing and embodiment are part and parcel of our sexual healing, that it's not just the sexual piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's self-tantra.
Self-tantra.
Yeah, it's learning.
Great.
It's living that yin yang within and not outsourcing that to the external. Yeah.
When we run our women's trainings, we say to them, even though we're in Tulum right now, there's a lot of gorgeous spiritual men around. But we say, hey, we're inviting you to be celibate for this training, because we want to drop old patterns and to just be our own lover before we share ourselves with others. And, and I myself found that so important in my journey. Like you say, like, we learn about our sexuality through other from the get-go. Like, nobody at our school says, here's how to have a healthy self-relationship, self-pleasure practice. It's all projected outward, whether that's, initially onto porn, onto fantasy, onto the boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, it's just projected outwards. And I was so amazed when I got into sexual arts that self-pleasure was seen as a meditation, and that it was, actually like putting my own presence on my own sexual energy in my own body as a temple. It's like, this is groundbreaking. Why didn't anyone teach us this? And I thought, if only when we were like 15 or whatever age, we had a year on our own, like before leaping into relationship or not quite relationship, but connection, that we build a relationship with ourselves and learn even things like breasts. Like, that was a revelation for me, because the boys who were grabbing my breasts were like 14-year-old boys who don't have breasts. And I never massaged my own breasts. I had no idea what they liked. And they were always grabbed in a way that it wasn't until I was in my 20s and started doing breast massage. And I'm like, this is my pleasure. This is what I like. I had no idea. Now I can tell them is what I like, but I had no idea. And how many women go through their entire sexual life handing over their breasts to somebody else and not getting any pleasure, just putting up with it. These are such simple things, actually. But like you say, we don't have the elders, we don't have the wisdom keepers. And I think this is a very tragic topic. And I wonder what your thoughts are on the next generation. Is there anything we can do? Like, we see the digital world getting bigger. We've got AI coming in, we've got virtual reality coming in, we've got robots coming in. This could all get really bad, right? What are your hopes for future generations?
I'm most scared with the VR. The VR is the scariest thing because I've watched virtual reality pornography, and there's kids out there right now that are consuming it. And because it's so real, because there's three or four women coming over and it's point of view porn. So as you look down, it's some other, porn star's cock, but you think that it's you, but you're a little boy, you're 12, and all of a sudden you look down and you see a 7-inch cock. And so that creates dysmorphia for young boys. And then in addition to that, all of these women coming and just worshiping you as if you're a god and you don't have to do anything, that creates its own level of narcissism, right? So this is a huge fucking problem with AI and VR. So what I'm personally doing is I'm in the process of building my own men's group and my own men community to teach these practices, but I'm also going to have a nonprofit on the side where I'm in the process of building a secular sex positive nonprofit that's a community designed for parents to come in to get education around how to keep their children safe with not only just browser blockers and things of that nature, but how do we have these conversations around consent? Because there's so much sexual abuse that's happening between children on children, older children on younger children too, that happens in this world. And a lot of the people I work with have that story, and I also have that story, and when I was a child. So the reality is if we don't start building communities where we can come and actually get good education and then start to educate ourselves, then it's a slippery slope towards where this is going, because the people that are creating these technologies are uninitiated men often, right? They are profit driven. They don't give a shit. They're building AI and VR and all these bots and all these things without being initiated into their own sexual well-being practices, meaning that they're just seeing you as a means to an end because they're themselves using themselves as a means to an end. And then therefore they're building these techs that are ultimately going to be weaponized against our kids. And so this is a huge, huge problem, and we need as many people as we can talking about it and getting into these conversations because, oh my gosh, it's a scary landscape. Absolutely.
How can we, like, if you got the opportunity to go and talk to, like, I don't know, like 10-year-olds, 14-year-olds, whatever, how can we sell something healthier to them? Like, we're up against consumerism and addiction, and that's pretty tough. And most of us, like you've pointed out, many of us go through pain point. You and I talk about, your bladder infection, my cyst. Or people go through 20 years of addiction and then it's messing up their relationships. Is there a way, do you think, that we can speak to younger generations that prevents them needing to go through all the way to that life falling apart pain point? Is there anything, just curious, because you have a very clear voice on this in your own experience. What would you say to a 14-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, we need fathers and their 14-year-olds to be in circles with leadership to help conversations happen in real time. Men and women that have had sexual traumas or porn addictions often don't protect their own children because they have their own blind spots. And so you often see if a mother or father went through a trauma when they're 8, their child might be fine, and then at 8 they just turn a blind eye, and that's when their child goes through a similar experience. The epigenetic lineage imprints follow through the line. And so what I think is really critical is the most important piece, if you're out there listening and you have sexual distortion or shadow that needs to be integrated, is to do your own work, because that is the way in which you will ensure that your child is not going to go through the same thing that you did. And I think that we can't just say, oh, somebody else's problem. Like, it starts with self, and then it starts with the way in which we raise our children. But if I were to talk to a young boy that's in front of me right now, I would just be very honest. Especially if they know what pornography is, like, I was addicted to pornography for 20 years. Here's all of the ways in which it screwed things up for me, and here's all the work and all of the trials and tribulations that I've had to go through to get to where I am now. Are you interested in helping me? Are you interested in learning some new ways to relate to sexuality that will be healthier for you as you move forward? And then give them the option to step through that door or not, depending upon where they're at in their own curiosity and development, because we can't force them.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I hope that platforms open up massively for your voice to come through, because I think that's it. That sounds like a good approach. A lot of people ask me about, reaching the next generation, and sometimes around this topic, I can sometimes feel kind of like overwhelmed. And yeah, and yeah, we do know that like the pain point eventually transforms people. So if the older generations can share that pain point, I think like when you said fathers and sons being in circle, it's like, wouldn't it be great if they were sharing circles and the younger men, boys could hear some of the pain of the older men that isn't talked about? It's just glorified a lot, and it's this exciting, slightly secretive thing that's got this charge to it. And there's not maybe enough voices talking about the pain and the suffering that is caused, right? So I think these are all important things.
I mean, we're doing it right here. We're on a podcast. We're talking about it. So this is a part of the solution. But you guys have your community that you're building. And I would prioritize that for 2024, which is how do we have these offshoot conversations or channels where we can begin the process of having the conversations? Like, how do you speak to your children about this stuff? How do we keep our children safe? What browser blockers are you using? When do we remove the browser blockers and make it responsible for the child to be accountable to themselves? And like, what are those dynamics?
And what about the dynamic of like the more we block something and say no, it's bad, like the more enticing it becomes? Like that's part of the whole thing, isn't it? Is that it's got this secretive element. And because people are taught to contract around sexual energy, that's what they're learning. The more secretive it is, the more charge it has. That's part of our healing, isn't it? To like learn expansiveness and relaxation instead of contraction.
So my sense would be, although that there would probably be parents out there that would push back against this, but I'm stepping into a position likely where I'm going to be moving into a stepfather role, right? So it's like, okay, at a certain age, these children, absolutely, no way. But then when they get to be through puberty and they're beginning that process of exploring their sexuality, what does that look like? Is there a way actually maybe to sit down with them and actually show them a small porn clip, like, and to let them know that this is what's out there in the internet? And here's why you should be careful with it. I'm not necessarily saying that that's the solution, but it would be a better solution to do that than it would be to let a child stumble into some of the horrific stuff that's out there, whereby which they go down that rabbit hole and they end up in a dangerous part of the internet.
I think what you're saying is probably very valid, because I definitely know from things like marijuana, which was illegal in my country growing up in England, but then over the water in the Netherlands, it was legalized. And parents could talk about it. There seems way less like excitement about it and attraction to it where it's out in the open than where it was. There's this charge to being the rebel and having secrecy when you're a teenager, right? And I think that's part of what makes it so enticing until you're addicted, and then it's too late. So yeah, these are all really interesting points. There's so much to unpack here. You and I are, we've chatted earlier, and we're both into the Taoist lineage and tantric practices. And this is so much about energy. We've touched on this a little bit, but I know it's, for me, having the language around energy was so helpful, not only in my sexuality, but in life itself. It's like, oh, energy, everything's energy. The food I eat can have more energy in it or less energy, not calories, but life force energy. The places I live can be full of life force energy, the nature I go into. And then realizing that, it's like, wow, this is what makes us feel good and happy. And oh, we can go for partners who are full of life force energy. We can offer our energy. So it's just like such a simple concept, and yet it's not taught again. But within that, there also can be energetic hygiene is something not talked about. So we talk about sexual hygiene, catching an STI. But it took me years to realize that you can also pick up energies or entities from partners or porn or sexual experiences that are ultimately not good for our greater well-being or our life force. And so I know you also understand the world in these terms. What's your understanding around on this energetic level?
Yeah, I mean, I would say entities or energies, dark energies, can get in to the system in many different ways. My mentor is a man named Bob Falconer. He's an IFS psychedelic facilitator and therapist, but he's probably like one of the world's leading experts on exorcisms and entity removals. And they call them in IFS, they call them unattached burdens, is what they call them. And so these things can get in through birth, meaning their lineage burdens. We're born with them. I had some that I had to work with to get out of my system when I came in. There are also ones that you can pick up through sexual partners. You can also get them when you're unconscious, let's say on a surgical table. There's also ones that can get in through self-harm and obviously sexual traumas. And then porn as well, right? I don't necessarily know if these things can travel through technologies, although I wouldn't, I don't want to say yes or no. But what I will say is that if there is those aspects of self that where there's something has gotten in, porn definitely feeds that monster. It feeds that thing inside. And I've worked with both men and women where I've helped clear entities and things and cut cords and ensured that I wasn't exercising a part of them, but that it was actually something that was not a part of them. And there's a particular way to move through this the psyche and through that person's complex system to ensure that their parts are in a safe place to do that work and to get that thing to leave. And it's a no negotiation process. Once it's I've been identified, that thing has to go and it will go. And there's a level of command, but there's also a level of not forcing it to go because this thing has kind of been a tyrant king in people's system or a tyrant queen inside of somebody's system. And we have to go about it in an intelligent way. But ultimately, we're just sending it back to love and light, to its family, to creation itself. And once it's gone, we make sure that there's no cords connected to the individual and any of those parts can kind of reorient to a new way of being and the person can kind of start over. So the reason why I share all this is to say that you could be addicted to pornography for 20, 25 years and do therapy for, years and years and not have that thing actually relieve itself. You could also shift and do what I would call this psycho-spiritual work by working with the entities, if there is one, and have immediate response whereby which the person is completely free from that point forward forevermore. So it's just understanding that the psychological ways that we've been trained are very, very minute in comparison to this type of awareness, this Taoist type of awareness, and two, just the shamanic ways, which is all cultures acknowledge these entities, and yet we don't.
Yeah, we don't. When I first heard about them, I was like, I don't even want to believe in that. That's weird. It's woo-woo. I have no space for it. I want to be grounded. And then when I started to do this work, especially doing trauma release work, like the TRE exercises, breath work, I do trauma release breath work. And when there's some activation and I see traumas release the body, it's like it's absolutely undeniable that you see entities leaving people. And not only that, but there's like such a transformation. It's like this something's been hijacking the life force energy, and also sometimes compelling actions in certain ways. And it's really like a parasite. Funnily enough, I used to work in a detox clinic clearing parasites physically from people, and I saw there was a kind of connection between physical parasites, energetic parasites. And I feel like we need to open this conversation, even though it's a little edgy and our whole society doesn't want to talk about it and it's woo-woo and whatever. I do feel it's an important and helpful conversation because when we look at that more esoteric level, it then gives us another level to be able to heal and release. So I'm super happy to hear that you're also having that understanding. And I think we need to open up this conversation as well, even if it's uncomfortable a little while for people, because it's super helpful. And I think when we think about energetic hygiene, even when I've talked to women who I work with, even a little about like feeling into a lover's energy body and sensing if that's an energy that feels coherent and or harmful to them, they're like, oh God, what was I thinking? I can really see that this energy isn't aligned for me. So it's almost like it's there, but we're not conscious enough of it. Like that we actually do have an inherent understanding about these things.
Yeah, there's a felt sense, there's a somatic realization, and often we bypass that because when we had our abuse when we were young, as we were children, where this issue is that there was a silent witness. That's where the shame comes in, and that's where our own lack of boundaries come in. So let's just say you have an abusive father, and you either have no mother. That would be a very silent witness. You just have the abuse, so there's nobody there to protect you. Or you might have a mother who's also afraid of the father, therefore she doesn't protect the boy or the girl, right? So in those circumstances, we have situations whereby which either they say, oh no, he would never do that, you know, they just deny it, or you're crazy, that didn't happen to you, or they see it and just turn away and walk away, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where the shame gets in, and that's where we become susceptible to then attracting similar partners that enact that, because we don't have an internal system to stand up to that type of behavior. And so when I've worked with women, especially in psychedelic spaces, sometimes I can feel inside of their own field the traumas that they carry from their past that are even, how do I say this, inviting me to reenact that experience with them.
Yeah.
And right. I have enough self-awareness to understand that that's not me and or my arousal, but that's actually what they carry in their own field and their own journey, and to be able to speak to that and help them to move all that energetic out. Because I've worked with many women that have actually been abused in medicine spaces or have had sexual traumas. And when they come, I'm realizing like, oh, wow, there's a lot here that needs to clear in order for them to feel safe in the masculine. And so I can see why a lot of people that are in tantric circles or polarity teachers or people that are the gurus in India or all these places can justify like, oh, well, you know, you pulled me into that, or you asked me to do that, or whatever, because they're not clear and clean in their own sexual energies. Mm-hmm. And then therefore they go and do these abusive things and they call it a healing, when really like there's a co-created trauma bond that's happening. And then that's the nature of these culty cult leaders that actually hurt women, right? So that's what I see. Yeah. It's very, very easy for me to see it.
Oh, it's really huge. It's so many topics that we could go into, but that's a really huge one. I've been working actually myself in trauma training for tantra professionals. It's been something I've dedicated the last few years to. And, you know, it's like so important to see why we need to hold space rather than get entangled with people because of these karmic dances, and that we will end up reenacting, especially if we're in an authority position, that we can just end up reenacting the abusive authority if we get entangled. And we really need to be space holders, not interactors, in order to create space for people to have their healing. So I think that's really important for us all to be aware of in these fields, where we're trying to heal very edgy and difficult things. It's so shadowy in its nature. So we have to be crystal clear in our space holding. And I also feel work with more than one facilitator, like work in teams, so we have accountability. And, you know, I think when there's like one guru on the top, it's the recipe for disaster.
Oh,
I hope we're moving away from that era.
Yeah, we must. We must.
Yeah.
Why within the men's group that I've created, it's a circle. It's four of us. We're all equal. There's no hierarchy, right? It's really critical to make sure that you're held accountable, as opposed to, you know, like Jamie Wheel, he's one of my mentors, and he talks about culty cults. And like, when you look at a cult leader, what are the different dimensions? And basically there's a matrix that he created, which is either you want to follow them, you want to flee from them, you want to fight them, or you want to fuck them, right? And so the goal, if you see somebody that you look up to, is to stay in the middle and just feel before you decide to do anything within them, because there might be aspects of your own projections and or your own shadow. And we all are trying to fill the heart-shaped hole in our hearts that wants to be in community, or to, you know, or there's a projection of mom or dad or whatever it is there. And we need to just stay in the middle and feel, so that we don't get looped up into these, you know, these things that ultimately are going to use us as a means to an end. So, yeah.
Ah, so much wisdom. I love it. I see that we've been talking already an hour, and I could talk for hours more, but we'll have to do that another time. So I think to wrap up, I think I'd just like to bring it back to, if, for someone who's listening to this now and, you know, absorbing all these different ideas and concepts, but they're basically like, what's my first step? What am I going to do? I'm giving away my life force energy to porn. Maybe there's entities, maybe there's trauma, maybe there's this and that, but what's the call to action? What's the first step? For those people.
Yeah, so I'll give you an answer for both male, for the man and the women out there. So for women, because a lot of women contact me and they go, hey, my partner is watching pornography and this is impacting me massively, or I just found out I'm heartbroken. So what I say to them is the porn use didn't start with you. It started well before you ever came into his life, likely. I mean, almost always, because boys find this at 11, 12, 13, and that sets up their way of relating, and here they are. So that's a critical component, which helps women to not blame themselves or not think that they're worthy or not think they're pretty or sexy or whatever that is, because it's really not about that. Most of the time, men are using sex and porn, or excuse me, porn and masturbation as a means to feel better anytime they get triggered with anything in life that is overwhelming to their system. That's just what they've figured out. So for that, I would just say, give yourself, you know, just a breath, and then obviously find your women's circles and begin the process of talking to people. But don't bypass your anger. There's righteous, necessary, sacred rage that is necessary for the feminine to hold the masculine accountable to making those changes, right? So it's that. It's without the blame, take responsibility, but also grow up, show up, and stand up and be the man that you say you are. As it relates to the men, first and foremost, acknowledge it. I can't stop watching porn, or I think I might have a porn problem. Second, reach out to somebody who's not going to shame you. Third, find somebody who's a specialist in this, or join the community that I'm building, or whatever it might be. But the other thing that I would say is buy one of these things. This is a massage gun. Get the tallest, or the big ball, and begin the process of clearing out your nervous system, starting with the bottom of your feet, your legs, your perineum, especially your anus, your tailbone, all the way up your spine, the whole microcosmic orbit. Begin to work with the perineum and learn how to trauma release all that energy and that gunk out of your system. Because you're only gonna be as safe and as clear and as clean inside of your own system as your ability to move the energetic yuck out of your own body, mind, and soul. Yeah.
Oh. Amazing. Thank you. That was brilliant guidance. And I love that you also have for women. Partway through, I'm like, oh, I want to ask about partners. And there's just so many topics to this, but I feel like you've covered so much here. And I'm really grateful that you're putting your voice to this topic and bringing your own wisdom and guidance to other men and couples. So thank you so much for sharing here today.
Thank you, Shashi, for having me.